couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Project Power, Sputnik, Boys State, Ted Lasso, which is actually a TV series, and Don't Look Deeper. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a spotlight on Studio Ghibli's Kiki's Delivery Service. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is the thing that really should be occupying everybody's mind, is, and it's not even a political thing. It doesn't delve into politics whatsoever unless you want to talk about Wookiee politics. And that is, Disney Plus is going to be airing the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special on November 17th. Now, those who don't know the background of whatever the Star Wars Holiday Special is, back in 1978, after Star Wars was a huge hit, I mean, this thing was a huge deal. It defined my childhood. And then in 1978, in November, CBS did a Star Wars Holiday Special, which they basically just licensed the stuff from, well, at the time, 20th Century Fox. I don't even think Lucasfilm had as much control as he later did. Lucas handed over the characters to him, and it was because it was the first movie, it hadn't become what it quickly became over the next decade, but they just handed over the characters, and it's the weirdest thing because they actually have Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill in this goofy variety show holiday special. Now, you can find it on the internet. It's all over the place. I mean, Riff Trax actually has a version of it because the rights holders aren't bothering with it. It's sort of this infamous thing. You used to be able to go to comic conventions and buy DVDs of it. I've got a DVD of it somewhere. Back then in 1978, there weren't a whole lot of VCRs, but people had them. And the few people who had them, there's two main dubs of it that people had gotten a good copy of, and you can watch it, and it's terrible. It's goofy as all get out, and I love it because it's so terrible. And I remember watching it as a kid. I was like 7, and I'm watching it. I thought it was the greatest thing ever, and now I watch it now, and it's kind of horrible. The biggest thing that it's known for is the Star Wars Holiday Special introduces the character of Boba Fett in this weird animated short in the middle of it that's done in the same style as the old droids animated series, which was, I think, closer to the 80s, closer to the release of Empire Strikes Back in 1980. But yeah, the fact that Lego is doing a version of it now, they're doing it post Rise of Skywalker. So they're going to have Rey and Kylo Ren, and they're going to have the different characters. They're going to have some cast members, voice cast members, do it. I doubt Harrison Ford's going to be doing it, but I would not be surprised if Mark Hamill is doing Harrison Ford for the show. I'm looking forward to it because it looks like it's going to be just a lot of fun. It's going to be a premiering on Disney Plus. I watch the Star Wars Holiday Special, usually with the Riff Trax version, at least once a year. And it'll be fun to have something new to go along with it. So that to me is, that made me giddy this week. That's happy news for the week. Another somewhat happy news. We also have the AMC theaters opening this week, followed by some other theaters as well. But the big ones is AMC because that's like the biggest chain out there. Now, of course, they're doing limited seating and they're doing, special cleaning, and they do have a mask requirement, and it's a little bit more assertive and placed more strategically on their page, which is a good thing. Obviously, if you're going to be eating and drinking, you can take your mask down for that, but, wear it when you're not. But one of the things they did, which I don't know if this was the right move to do, they want to incentivize people to come into the theater, so they don't want people to have to spend $10 to get into the theater. So like opening day, which is August 20th, I believe, they're saying we're throwing back prices to 100 years ago. Come to the movies for what it cost back 100 years ago, which is 15 cents, which is kind of a bizarre choice to do during a coin shortage. But that's okay. I could scare up 15 cents. I just don't know if reminding people the way the world was 100 years ago is exactly the way we want to do things, considering there was a pandemic going on 100 years ago, as there is right now. I have that A-list membership. And so, I mean, I'm still paying $20 a month. So, you know, we'll see. I still don't know if I'm comfortable going into theaters, but, you know, this is their chance to open things up, because on August 21st, you've got Unhinged coming out. On August 28th, you've got Bill and Ted. And I believe the New Mutants coming out in theaters. And then, of course, you have Tenet coming out famously on Labor Day weekend. At the same time, you're going to be battling Mulan at a $30 premium price through Disney Plus. So really, the next couple weeks is going to dictate what happens to the release slate of movies in the next couple months. If this does not go well, you're going to start seeing release dates move. If they don't feel that it's smart, or if within 3 or 4 weeks we start seeing little spikes that can be traced back to movie theaters, you're going to see a reshuffling. I hopefully not, but AMC says that they're confident. I think Cinemark has said this too. They're confident they could do this with limited capacity. Just as long as they're not like, well, we'll do limited capacity for 2 weeks and then we're going to open it completely up regardless of what's going on with the virus in the local. That can be a problem. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the new Charlie Kaufman movie, which is coming to Netflix on Labor Day weekend. First of all, before I even play this trailer, can we acknowledge how crazy Labor Day weekend is right now? Pandemic or not, it's going to be one of the biggest and most exciting Labor Day weekends for film. You've got Mulan coming out on Disney Plus. You've got Tenet opening in theaters. You're already going to have Bill and Ted and the New Mutants and Unhinged in theaters as well. This is the biggest Labor Day weekend you've ever had. And then on top of it, you've got this Charlie Kaufman movie, and he comes out with a movie every couple of years, and he's sort of beloved by critics. So it's going to be a real interesting Labor Day weekend. It's a huge change from when, like, Bangkok Dangerous with Nicolas Cage came out and made like $17 on the weekend. Anyways, Charlie Kaufman's new movie is I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
I'm visiting Jake's parents for the first time. He hasn't been my boyfriend for very long.
They really are looking forward to meeting you.
I think of ending things.
Hello? We're here.
Here they come.
Jake has told us so much about you.
He's told me so much about both of you too.
And you came anyway.
But there's just something profoundly wrong here.
Are you okay?
You don't have to go.
I don't have to go where?
Forward.
As you would expect from Charlie Kaufman, it's bizarre, it's weird, it's strange. But that's what you like about his stuff. That's what makes his stuff unique. When he directs, he sometimes goes so far off the deep end, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I like his stuff when he wrote, like Being John Malkovich or Adaptation. Those kind of movies, I think you need to have an actual regular director sort of tamp down the crazy a bit. But still, I'm looking forward to this one. I'm excited. We'll be talking about this one on Labor Day weekend. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Judas and the Black Messiah, which is available in 2021.
18 months for the stolen car. 5 years for impersonating a federal officer. Or you can go home.
The Black Panthers are forming a rainbow coalition of oppressed brothers and sisters of every color.
Their aim is to sow hatred and inspire terror.
I will learn all that I can. I will learn all.
These ain't no terrorists.
You can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation.
This is a movie about the Black Panthers and about law enforcement infiltrating the Black Panthers. The thing that I worry about a movie like this is that they have these powerful scenes that all make it in the trailer, and then all the other dialogue scenes and interpersonal scenes can sometimes be a bit subdued. This reminds me a lot of Black Klansman. I mean, even though it's not a Spike Lee joint, it reminds me of the setup and the feel and the background of it that they had with Black Klansman and the energy that they put into Black Klansman. I just hope that the director of this captures that excitement from the trailer and doesn't get bogged down. And that's the thing that worries me about historical films. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Sputnik and Boys State. And to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. Let's take a side trip to Russia. One of the things about Russia that I really do adore, I mean, let's take all the politics and the worldview out of it. There's some really neat stuff happening in Russia when it comes to film. Russia is delving into these sort of blockbusters. I've covered a couple of them in the past. And they don't have the money and they don't have the Hollywood glitz behind it, but they're trying to put out some pretty innovative stuff. There was a horror movie I covered a couple of years ago called The Mermaid. It was creepy enough. And apparently they're doing a sequel of that coming up. There've been real attempts to do science fiction and action movies. And that's what you've got with Sputnik. Now I can't play a trailer. The subtitles do go by very fast sometimes. They could leave them on the screen a little longer. I found that was, they weren't timed out perfectly. And that becomes a bit of a challenge. You may have to pop back a couple times. But this Russian sci-fi thriller follows a cosmonaut in 1983 who returns to Earth with a symbiotic life form living inside him. Like I said, there's no trailer for it, but it's very atmospheric and it's a bit of a throwback movie, but it also is an ooey gooey modern monster movie as well because of the special effects they use. But they're limited special effects. They don't go overboard. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why we get some interesting stuff coming out of other countries in particular. But if you look at Russia, they throw a lot of money around, but they don't throw a lot of money around into their film culture. You can see them, especially in this movie, doing a lot with a little. And they use atmosphere and they use suspense and they use elements that are in camera filmmaking. And then when they have this creature show up, that's when they're spending their money. The film itself takes place on this secret base in like Kazakhstan, in Soviet Kazakhstan. And there are prisoners there that they have doing basically slave labor, but it's essentially isolated from the world. So it doesn't take place on a spaceship. The very beginning takes place on a spaceship, but it does fall into that level of something in a lab or a spaceship that is a danger, and it's obviously a danger and people are trying to work with it. That's one of my favorite subgenres. And they totally fall into this one. Now they recruit this woman who's very attractive, but she's very plain made up in this film. They don't make her like, you know, she doesn't show up with her hair all done and everything, but she's actually a very attractive woman. She plays the main character and she's brought in as sort of like a, somebody to give a different perspective on what to do with this strange situation they have. And of course she's butt head with some of the military people and some of the doctors, but also is trying to figure out what to do and maybe try and save some lives. But of course the Russians, being in the Soviet era Russia, they want to just, you know, maybe if it's a weaponized thing, they want to use that. The creature design's a little bit mundane. There's a little bit of a Demogorgon feel to it from Stranger Things or the bad guys from A Quiet Place. It has that look to it, which we've seen multiple times. So it's not terribly unique, but it is an interesting take. It's also an interesting take on almost the Venom story. If you remember the movie Venom with Tom Hardy, based on the Marvel comic, it has the whole same thing where it's this symbiotic creature that sometimes jumps out and eats people's brains, you know, that kind of thing. It's just a very different version of it, but it's cool and it's fun to watch. It's ooey-gooey horror. You do have to read subtitles, but I got to say, it's causing a bit of a splash in the independent film community, so I really wanted to highlight it here. I'm going to say that Sputnik kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Boys State. As part of the American Legion's Boys State program, more than 1,000 teenage boys travel to Austin to develop a mock government and hold elections.
Get yourselves ready for a turbulent election.
Whatever happens, dude, best of luck.
You win, I support you fully.
My name is Steven Garza, and I'm running for governor.
As to the political views voiced in my speech, sometimes you gotta say what you gotta say in an attempt to win.
I think he's a fantastic politician. But I don't think a fantastic politician is a compliment either.
This is debuting this weekend on Apple TV+. And it was a big hit at the Sundance Film Festival, picked up by A24. And this is kind of a big deal because it's like Greyhound. It's an acquired movie that's not something that they develop, but it's something that they're trying to build up their quality cinema store with while they're building more content. And that's, I'd say, the biggest downfall of Apple TV Plus is that it doesn't have the wide content of a library of content that something like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon has, or even Disney for that matter. But this film, it's a documentary, and it's fascinating because I never went to Boise State. I had friends who went to Boise State. Well, every state does their Boise State. Ours was, I was in Ohio, so it was Buckeye Boise State. And every state does their own version of it. And I don't know if the American Legion is involved in every state, but that's the one that runs it in Texas. And it's a fascinating program because not only does it show the good things about Boise State and the flaws about Boise State as a program, but it also gives you a very unwashed look at teenagers, male teenagers. You know, put them all together. I mean, you don't get the normal stuff that you'd expect. It's not Animal House, but it shows what very aggressively ambitious teenagers can do and where there's good and bad in that. And what's interesting is that, first of all, Texas is known very conservative in general, traditionally, and the American Legion is very conservative. And as they put this together, the purpose of this is for them to build a government kind of from the ground up. And it shows them how to structure a government, which is good. And then it has them run an election, which is good. What it doesn't have is it doesn't have governance. And that's one of the downfalls of something like Boise State, is it doesn't teach how to govern after you're elected, or it doesn't teach how your governing can affect future elections. It's just about running. And in doing so, and this is sort of the chilling part of it, is you see people basically selling their souls. You see people saying whatever they can to get elected. In fact, they arbitrarily split the boys up into two parties, the Nationalists and the Federalists. And ultimately, their platforms come back the same. Even though there's different political viewpoints, you got progressives and moderates in the crowd, it's Texas. So it's about guns, abortion, and immigration. Those are the three top planks in both platforms, and they're the same choice. It's not diametrically opposed. It's not like one's pro-choice and one's pro-life. Both sides are vehemently pro-life, and there's this one guy who's running for governor who's like, well, I'm pro-choice, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say I'm pro-life so he could get elected. So it does show that realities of politics that they're learning that aren't probably good lessons. And that's, I think, the thing that makes it so chilling at times, because it's a kind of a game for the kids because it's a mock election. There really are no consequences in terms of policy and it affecting people. So they can have a little bit more of a fun attitude about it, but sometimes you maybe are learning the wrong lessons. So it's a fascinating look at how people play government, but also don't exactly know how it works because they haven't really done it yet. And that's the takeaway for me from Boise State. So I'm going to have to say overall, Boise State rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Project Power and Don't Look Deeper. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Project Power. Or Project Power. I had this pointed out to me. I guess it could go either way. I always thought it was Project Power. You've seen movies plenty of times where they'll name check the movie. I just watched this weekend the original Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, with him in the movie, not with him in my house. That would have been fun. So there's a line in Total Recall where it's just thrown in and it's so awkward. And I think it's one of the guys says to Michael Ironside, if we don't get him back in time, he's going to have total recall. Project Power or Project Power, because it really could go either way. Anyways, enough of that nonsense. Let's talk about the movie. Jamie Foxx plays a man investigating the distribution of a new street drug that gives people superpowers for 5 minutes a pop.
Welcome to Project Power. Our goal is simple. The next evolution of the human species.
You're taking one of those before.
It can make you strong. Make you invisible. You never know what your power is until you try it.
You push that power, don't you?
Yeah. On the streets, they're talking about superpowers, but they're not talking about how one hit could kill you. What's the plan now?
You took something from me. I gotta get it back.
That's on one.
This is available on Netflix right now, and it's another one in the line of Netflix getting major stars, because they've got Jamie Foxx. They also have Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this movie. Netflix has been pretty aggressive over the last 3 years, I'd say, ever since they did Bright with Will Smith, which was a terrible movie, but they did it. And they did it. Will Smith was in it. Noomi Rapace was in it. Joel Edgerton was in it. And then over the next couple of years, you start seeing big names in these movies. I remember when they had Bird Box with Sandra Bullock. And this is another one in line of taking major motion picture stars and making movies for Netflix. I mean, we had that with The Old Guard with Charlize Theron. We had that with Extraction with Chris Hemsworth. Even this summer, you know, they're really beefing this stuff up. Even Ryan Reynolds in that coked up fever dream he did, Six Underground with Michael Bay. These are major stars. These are major players. So Project Power, with these people in it, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Jamie Foxx, these are the kind of things you'd expect to see in the theaters in late August. I've done enough movie reviewing for years, decades even, to know as bizarre as 2020 is, normally you, at this time of the summer, you have all the major releases out, and then they have some smaller piddly ones that are in August and September. And these are the kinds you see. And they make $20, $30 million in the theater, and they make their budget back. And, you know, they're sort of cash cows for the studio. Project Power is exactly that. It feels exactly like that. There was this movie, I think, was it called Sleepless or something like that? I forget what it actually had. Jamie Foxx, and I think it was Michelle Monaghan, and it was, again, like sort of a cop drug dealer type thing. This has a lot more to do with the cop drug dealer type of movie than a superhero movie. They're pushing it as a superhero movie because superhero movies are big and make money. But this one is much more of a sort of a cop movie. Even though Jamie Foxx doesn't play a cop, he sort of is working outside the law. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a cop who is hooked on this drug. And it's all hinged on this girl who's a dealer, who's a very, very low-level dealer. And they both are leaning on her to kind of follow up the chain to find the source of this drug. It's got all the cliches of a gritty cop film and a superhero origin story. So it's got all the problems of both. But it's mildly entertaining. It runs a little long. I will say that. It overstays its welcome for sure. And there's some stuff in there that's really kind of stupid, let's just say. There's an arrogance to the Jamie Foxx movies that he makes, especially when he's the rugged hero, and that totally comes through. And then there's the arrogance of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who comes through most everything he does as well. So you're running into stars' egos. But, you know, like I said, this is the kind of thing you would have seen in theaters on a normal year in the middle of August. And, you know, it wasn't a total waste of time. It's fun. If you're looking for something brand new on a Friday night, it's there and it works. And it's better than Bright. I will say that. So I'm going to have to say Project Power. I'm going to be nice and say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Don't Look Deeper. This Quibi film follows a teenage girl who discovers that she is an artificially intelligent synthetic android.
It happened again. Third time this year.
What happened, baby? What happened?
Memories get taken from me sometimes.
Where did you go? I've been texting you all night.
We can't keep doing this. It's not right.
There's no choice. If she becomes aware, it's only a matter of time before they become aware.
You really made a mess this time. Does she know where she came from?
This is part of Quibi's slate, and I'm wanting to cover a couple of these Quibi movies because I find it kind of fascinating that they've put these movies in this format on their service. Now, one of the things in general I've figured out with the Quibi movies, they're all surface. And a title like Don't Look Deeper is not just a title about the movie, but it's a warning about how to handle their films. Don't look any deeper than what you see in these films. There is very little subtext, even when they try to put it in. And Don't Look Deeper is really obvious about that. You know, like when I talked about The Most Dangerous Game, you know, the Hunting Man movie with Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz a couple weeks ago. That one's just an action movie, and that one I found more enjoyable. This one, it's directed by Catherine Hardwicke, and they promoted it as saying by the woman who directed Twilight. And part of the problem is Catherine Hardwicke is not a good director. Twilight was terrible, and part of the terribleness was just bad directing choices on her part. And you can watch this movie and see, oh yeah, I can see where the woman who directed Twilight directed this. Because it has a lot of the same thing, where it's all this focus on this one girl and how special she is, and everybody revolves around her. Now, the most fascinating thing I found about it is it stars as her quote-unquote parents, because she's an android, Emily Mortimer and Don Cheadle. And Emily Mortimer, to a degree, I think Emily Mortimer is just taking whatever role she can because she's an aging actress, and she's getting some work. She's in Relic this summer, and she was really good in that. But Don Cheadle, he's a very good actor, and he is so below his station in this movie. And every time he comes on screen, it's almost excruciating to watch because he's given terrible lines and terrible stage direction and not much back in terms of acting from the other actors. And he runs in and he's really trying. He's trying to do his thing, and he's Don Cheadle. He's a great actor and he's doing what he can, but he's just getting nothing back. And it's kind of pathetic watching it because you're just like, oh my God, he's so much better than the people around him and nobody's giving him anything. And it's like watching somebody trying to bounce a basketball that's deflated. It just doesn't work. So it's sort of, I feel pity for Don Cheadle as he's in this movie. I'm sure he got paid well, but this movie, there's no depth to it whatsoever, but it thinks it's really smart. And there's this weird sort of subtext they try to put in where I think it's trying to speak to trans children because of the whole, well, I'm in a body that I don't understand and, you know, it's something different. And, you know, there's a certain fluidity to what you can be in that situation. But, and they even have a well-known trans actor in the movie who plays one of the bad guys. But none of it gels, none of it clicks, and there's, you know, it's there. It's like, well, we attempted to do it, but we really didn't put anything in the subtext. You can look in there, but the cellar's empty. But, you know, if you're a kid and, you know, a teenage kid and you want to watch this, yeah, you might identify with the girl, but it just, the story doesn't hold together well at all. And I think part of that is because of that 7 to 10 minute context that it has to be in, where it's done, you know, almost between commercial breaks. And they never get enough time to focus enough to actually tell a real story. It's just not very well written. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to say, while I find the Quibi platform interesting, I'm going to have to say Don't Look Deeper kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Ted Lasso and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Kiki's Delivery Service. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment of the show. I'm sorry, it's come to an end once again. Let's talk about another review. This is on Apple TV Plus, so Apple TV Plus gets a twofer this week. And this is Ted Lasso. Jason Sudeikis stars as an American football coach who is chosen to manage a different type of football club in the UK despite knowing nothing about soccer.
AFC Richmond announced the hiring of their new manager, American football coach Ted Lasso.
You're an American who's now in charge of a football club, despite possessing very little knowledge of the game.
I know that AFC Richmond is going to give you everything they got, win or lose.
Or tie.
Right, y'all do ties here.
Did you see that?
He must be from England, yeah. Wales, is that another country?
Yes and no.
How many countries are in this country?
Four.
Like it or not, Richmond are changing the way we do things. And from now on, that way is the Lasso way.
First of all, to give some context of this, the character of Ted Lasso was created about 7 years ago by NBC Sports when they started to air the Premier League, which is the UK's football league, soccer, for those who don't understand the name of football across the pond. Sort of like the Uncle Drew movie. I forget what network it did, but created this character of Uncle Drew for some basketball promotion they did. I don't even remember what it was for. I think it was for that. What is that? That amateur sort of street ball competition they do in Harlem every year. I think they were going to be televising that. And so they created the character of Uncle Drew for that. And there were very popular spots. And then they made that Uncle Drew movie a couple years ago with all the NBA players dressed as old guys. Similarly, Ted Lasso was this character meant to promote the Premier League. And so they said, let's make this absurd character who's doesn't know anything about soccer sent to the UK to coach their football and have it be an absolute mess. And they're very funny spots. You can find them on YouTube. Just search Ted Lasso NBC Premier League or something like that. You should be able to find them. And they're clever and they're funny and they play around with some of the sports commentators across the pond and show the ignorance of Americans in knowing anything about the UK outside of what they watch on Doctor Who. So they've come back and made a whole series out of this, and it's run by Bill Lawrence. I have always liked Bill Lawrence's stuff. I thought Scrubs was great, and I loved Cougar Town. So he's a real charming filmmaker in his when he finally gets his shows to gel. And this one gels pretty quickly. It essentially has the same plot of Major League, if you remember the baseball movie from, what, 1989? It's essentially this woman who runs the league, her husband was a philanderer, and she got the team into the divorce, and so she wants to run into the ground to destroy what he loves. So she picks the worst person possible to be their coach, somebody who knows nothing about the sport, and bring him over from America. That's what Major League is about. And that's essentially the build up to this one. The only thing is it kind of starts to fall apart because Ted Lasso is such a charming guy. He's such a nice guy. He's such a good approach to things. He is a genuine spirit. He wants to win, but he wants to do it the right way. And even though he doesn't know the sport well, he knows how to coach. And of course wins people over, not just the team, but he wins over journalists and the public, even though they all hate him immediately when he shows up because they consider it a huge insult. But doggone it, if this is not just a fun little series, it's one of those things that I completely fell in love with. You know, during this pandemic, I have been watching a lot of stuff that I normally wouldn't watch because normally I'd be having to go to movies all the time, but I'm, you know, finding stuff that's coming to streaming either as a series or as a feature film or a Prime delivery or something like that. And I have found some gems over this time. The movie Vivarium was a gem. I loved that movie. I thought that was fantastic. It was an on-demand movie. The movie In the Vast of Night, which is on Amazon Prime right now. That I found wonderful. I love that movie. Ted Lasso's another one of those pandemic gems I found where I absolutely adore this series. And, you know, I've only seen the first three episodes because that's the only stuff that's not under embargo. So I said, well, I won't even watch the other stuff just in case it, you know, completely takes a bad turn in the middle. Who knows? I'll let you know if that happens later. But I enjoyed the heck out of this. I fell in love with the series. I think it's wonderful. And I can't wait to watch more of it. So, yeah, I'm going to have to say that Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to the Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on Kiki's Delivery Service. And the reason for that is it's being exhibited on Sunday, August 16th, as part of the Studio Ghibli Fest 2020. And that's sort of like that beam it into theaters type thing. They showed it earlier this summer, like in July through Fathom Events, but this is a similar thing through Marcus Theaters, the Studio Ghibli Fest. It's also available on HBO Max for free if you want to watch it, and you can rent it elsewhere on, you know, like everything from iTunes to Amazon, for a fee. But this Studio Ghibli film follows a young witch who travels to a new city when she's 13 to develop her abilities and make a new life for herself.
The story of a young girl.
Kiki!
In order to be a good witch, I have to train a year away from home.
Finding her place in the world.
Wow, this is just the kind of place I've always imagined. You okay back there?
Fine. Making new friends.
When you fly, you rely on what's inside of you, don't you?
We fly with our spirit.
And learning what it takes to be her own witch.
Maybe I have to find my own inspiration.
This is one of the very popular Studio Ghibli titles. I mean, Ghibli has done a couple dozen movies, and there are ones that are sort of most notable, like Spirited Away. I covered that a couple months ago. And Spirited Away is a beautiful movie, and it won the Academy Award. I think it snaked it away from either Monsters, Inc. or Shrek or something. It overtook one of these other big animated films of the year. My personal favorite of the entire Ghibli catalog is My Neighbor Totoro, and I believe I mentioned that when I talked about Spirited Away. But Kiki's Delivery Service is a wonderfully charming little film. And one of the things that's so interesting about the way Studio Ghibli does it, and it has this Japanese approach, it's not that it's hard to understand from a cultural perspective, but it just approaches a story like this very differently than an American studio would. Because an American studio would be steeped in the witch culture of America, which is, you know, the evil blue broomstick, you know, bubble, toil and trouble, all that European witch that has come over in the Salem witch trials, and something like The Witch, which is also a fascinating movie. But there'd be so much darkness to it, and there's just some charm to this that it's like, well, she's a witch, and she runs around on a blue broomstick, and she's got this cat she talks to, but that's just the spiritual thing that happens in this little town, in this little area of Japan, and everyone accepts it, and everyone's cool with it. And that's kind of what makes it so neat is, it's this story of basically the story of a girl going to another city to find a place for herself, but wrapped up in a package that you would never see in an American movie. And it's charming and sweet. And the character of Kiki, you can really feel for her because she is alone at 13, but she's trying to get by. And so she starts this sort of package delivery service, mostly moving like food and baked items to people because she can fly her broom. And it shows the loss of innocence. It shows the growth of a person and somebody maturing right at that sweet spot where maturity's starting. It shows a real depth to the character of Kiki and what everybody goes through, man or woman. It's beautifully animated. The Studio Ghibli stuff always has just this gorgeous look to it, and it's very impeccably made. And the characters are really sweet and tender. It's also like some of the other Ghibli movies, there's really no bad guy. I mean, Spirited Away kind of has bad guys in it, but stuff like Totoro and this, there's no like mustache twirling villain. It's more they're trying to overcome something, and the point of the movie is about Kiki's growth and about her being true to herself and growing up a little bit, but keeping a little bit of what is the heart and soul of a child, and that is really what she has to overcome. So there's no one she has to fight against aside from her own insecurities. And that's another thing that's beautiful about this movie is you don't always need the personified villain, and they don't do that with this one. And that's what's so charming about it. So Kiki's Delivery Service, whether you're going to go check it out during Studio Ghibli Fest in the theaters, or whether you're going to stream it on HBO Max, or you're going to pay for it somewhere else, I'm going to say Kiki's Delivery Service totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Available this week on DVD and Blu-ray is The Wretched, well known for being one of the biggest hits this summer in the drive-ins, The High Note, and vintage releases of Cry Freedom and The Quest. That is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Unhinged, Tesla, and The Sleepover. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.